It's The Record on KUOW. We are live tweeting the show at KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. Our relationship has changed, Seattle. I love you, but I'm going to have to be okay with not being in love with you. So writes columnist Tyrone Beeson in an essay for Pacific Northwest magazine. The essay is titled, I Hate You, Seattle, A Love Story. It's about the changing feelings the author has as Seattle morphs, he says, beyond recognition. We've got two guests who lived in the Seattle area for decades, so we're going to talk about that essay and a couple other stories that caught our attention this weekend. Casey Champion is a software engineer, a program manager at Microsoft's Imagine Academy, a lecturer at the UW in computer science. Welcome, Casey.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Gio Kabuyan, MC Geologic of the hip-hop duo Blue Scholars, also known as rapper Prometheus Brown. Gio, thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
Gio, you basically agree with this writer who's fallen out of love?
Yes, very much so. As I read through it, I found myself agreeing entirely with it. And similar timelines, too, with entering the entry point in the mid-90s. Those are my first memories of being around Seattle and the music, the culture, the food, the neighborhood characteristics. I remember being drawn in by that. And then also a lot of the self-critical parts about how there was a Seattle before him that had changed. And I was definitely recognizing that as well. And then also what he says at the very end, which is that it's half defeatist, half optimistic. It's a little bit of both. But at the end of the day, we still have, those of us who are here still have the power to shape the city the way we want.
Yes, thank you. We'll talk about what we could actually do beyond complain, because I love complaining.
Yeah.
But there's more. Casey, what was your take on, you didn't need this one essay to get you thinking about this, but where
truth,
do you stand?
Yeah, very true. I feel like I think about this every day I step out of my door. Mm. I live in the U District, like a real grown-up, I guess, and two of the gas stations that would normally be there just have these giant holes. They're going to be like 24-story apartment buildings, and I live in this tiny little beautiful apartment built in 1923, and I just think about how I'm going to permanently be living in the shadow of these things. And I'm so happy because I was a student at UW and I know how hard it was to find housing. And I'm so glad we have more opportunities here. But it doesn't make me any less upset that my favorite Italian bakery isn't in South Lake Union anymore. And it breaks my heart so much. And especially as a software engineer, I'm one of the few that are from here. And I have so many colleagues coming from all over the world. And I'm so excited to share this beautiful city with them. Like, let's go to South Seattle and have some amazing Ethiopian food. Like, let's go to North Seattle. This brunch place is going to, like, it's to die for. And they just don't really get out. Like, you know, when you're new to a city, you just sort of show up. And I just feel like all of these transplants haven't been doing as much work to integrate themselves in our community. And I try so hard as a software engineer to try and be a bridge for them. But they don't get why I'm so sad to see the changes, because I just think all of these people and all this culture and this art that is the reason that I fell in love with the city as a teenager, it just is slowly escaping.
Why do you, is it they don't get it just because they're new, or is there, what can you bring us from the land of software engineers as far as how, is that a useful label to think about how you look at the growth and change and income situation, everything in Seattle?
I mean, I think we have to be very real. The majority of people, like when I think about Capitol Hill, you know, for me growing up on the east side, Capitol Hill was like Mecca. We would come, we would go to Dick's on Broadway, and we thought we were the coolest kids around. We would go to the bars. Yeah, right? Yeah, me, a little nerd from, you know, the computer science class. And then I just look around Capitol Hill and it looks nothing the same. And it's because we have all of these, bless them, but 22, 23, 24-year-olds coming and they're making six-figure salaries and Amazon's giving them these massive cash bonuses. And they're like, what are you going to do with that kind of money? You're going to find what's the cool neighborhood. You're going to spend it on fancy housing and fancy food. And your lifestyle is so comfortable. You don't have to go out of your way to be like, hey, let me find a more affordable meal that's made by a family. Like, you're going to go to things that make you feel comfortable, that are easy, and a lot of those places are pretty bougie, and that's who's taking in the money. And so I think it's hard to show up in a new city and not have somebody that wants you to integrate when you have your own community that's sort of building up this whole separate transplant culture. And so I just feel like we're missing a bridge. We're missing sort of like old Seattleites to come into that community and be like, hey, there's places, guess what? There's places outside of South Lake Union that you can go eat and like go explore and like let's go check out art and stuff. Like I think a lot about Lambert House and how like what it meant for Lambert House to try and get forced out of Cap Hill and how we're leaving the LGBTQ community behind with all these transplants. And I just wish people maybe got a little more invested in their community, but I think we also have to reach out.
You mentioned a bridge. How can we reach out? How do we build that bridge, Gio?
I don't know. I feel like it shouldn't be on us who've been here to always carry that burden. I think the folks who come out here, they carry a lot of what they left behind, wherever they're from, with them here. And
so, what are some solutions? You had some in mind.
Yeah.
You said there's nothing we can do.
I agree that there should be moving out your comfort zone. I mean, you already left some comfort zone somewhere to come to a new place. Why not extend that further and explore outside your neighborhood, have conversations with people? It's not that hard, I don't think. But it does take time. Yes, but I think on our part, we accept this reality, but we don't. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I think about it every day. But food, music, culture, that's probably the starting point for a lot of folks. So I like to concentrate on having those things, because we could talk abstractly about culture, but unless you're actually in the community doing these things, creating these spaces where there are meeting grounds. And for me, I see a lot of it in food and music. Maybe we could start there.
Well, that's going to be an ongoing conversation. I want to get in before we go. We were talking about some of the things that happened this weekend. Casey, you brought us a story about Amazon's facial recognition software. The ACLU used it on the faces of members of Congress and said it mistakenly identified 28 members of Congress with people who'd been arrested. What happened?
I assume we're all somewhat familiar with facial recognition software because Facebook is so insistent on making sure you tag everybody in your photos. Mm-hmm. But unsurprisingly, like most softwares that say detect something about an individual where their background might come into effect, like say voice recognition software, predominantly works less effectively on the type of people that we see less represented in tech. And so within that, I want to say that people of color represent 20% of members of Congress, but like 39% of the misidentified people in this project. And I'm like, yeah, obviously, because you know who's testing, whose faces they're putting in front of this thing to test it all the time? The people that are working on it. It's the same reason that voice recognition software works way less effectively for women, because our voices tend to be higher and we tend not to be in the room of people developing it. It makes me think a lot about the seatbelt and how women suffered so many more fatalities in the early years of development of the seatbelt because they weren't putting women's bodies in there to test it. And so if we're at a place in time where we're starting to talk about using this type of technology for legislative purposes, my goodness, we better make sure that we are actually seeing real representation in the development of these technologies from the holistic population that they're going to affect.
And final story, just in our last minute, Gio, we're talking about the Showbox, maybe being saved, but maybe being torn down.
Yeah.
And I heard that your first show at the Showbox is a memory of having bombed.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, my first few. I don't know how we kept getting invited back to perform there. But yeah, from our first, I think we were playing a variety show, and we tried to bring a guitar on stage, even though that's not what we do.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why we thought that was a good idea, to opening up for De La Soul a year later
nice.
And committing the cardinal sin of performing over one of their instrumental tracks before they got on stage and getting yelled at for it as soon as we walked off stage, to headlining, to Mayor McGinn coming out to our show, to the crazy stuff that happened backstage, which shall go unmentioned. I would hate to see it go. And if it does, it would just be another indication of the trends that we were talking about earlier in this conversation.
Right. Gio Kabuyan, half of the hip-hop duo Blue Scholars, Prometheus Brown, here with software engineer and Microsoft Imagine Academy program manager, UW lecturer Casey Champion. Thanks for coming in, talking about the weekend and life here in this changing place. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us.